appears that the Pharisees were those who had strictly to what had the traditions and were unwilling to compromise. And so they were very careful about trying to follow the written traditions and the oral traditions and following all the rules. This man was very sure that he was following all of the rules, and his attitude affected the way that he looked at himself. Having everything, though, was his downfall. He came with his hands full, and he was unable to receive anything in his exchange with God. He was very proud of what he did, and he was very proud of what he didn't do. His attitude affected the way that he looked at others. His white hat seemed to spotlight the black hat of the tax collector, and he was able to say with some pride, "God, I'm glad I'm not like him." He was unable to see this man as a person of worth and of value. He just saw him as someone with a black hat. His attitude also affected the way that he was able to look at God. He came to God proud of who he was, and perhaps feeling a little smug that God had someone like him on God's side and on God's team. But you have another character in this story, the tax gatherer. You notice the way that he looked at himself? He came wearing a black hat, and he knew it. He knew what he would do and what he wouldn't do. He knew what he would do for a dollar, and it was just about anything. In contrast to the Pharisees who kept all of the rules, the tax collector seems to be the man who didn't have any scruples. He was the man who was willing to be a traitor, who was willing to work for the foreign government that was oppressing them. He was the man who was willing to manipulate and to abuse his fellow countrymen. He would do anything for a dollar, and he knew it. And you can tell by the way that his attitude towards others is different. He's not even aware that there's anyone else there. He's not looking around to compare himself to anyone else, because he is probably very aware that his hat is the blackest hat there that day. But his attitude toward God is also different. He doesn't look toward heaven and tell God how fortunate God is. Instead, he is able to only utter a cry of repentance, "Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner." There's something that's still not right about this story. And I think that for me, the thing that is not right is that as I look at this and as I think about us, it's pretty easy for me to see who we tend to identify with. I think that most of the time we think of ourselves as being identified with the tax collector. But if you look at the way that we act and the way that we live, and you look at the characterizations of ourselves, we are the people who are the religious folk. We're the ones who are wanting everyone to keep the rules. We are the ones who are wanting to spotlight the black hats of folks who don't keep all of the rules. Sometimes we are more Pharisaical than we want to acknowledge. As you read this story, there are some things that I think can apply to us. I think when I read this story, I hear a warning about the danger of pride, of thinking that I can be acceptable to God on the basis of my own goodness. And I also hear a warning here about the danger of making judgments of others, assuming that I can pick out those who are acceptable to God and can identify those who aren't acceptable to God. As we read this story, most of us leave it thankful that we're not as arrogant as the Pharisee. But you know, to look down our nose at the Pharisee because of his lack of humility is no more pleasing to God than to look down our nose at the tax collector because of his lack of morality. Either one of these hinders our ability to relate to others or to relate to God. Sometimes, as persons who are vocational ministers, we've become separated from the people that we're trying to minister to. We've become proud of our religious life. We've become proud of who we are, what we do, and what we're not willing to do. And sometimes that causes us to think differently about the people that we are trying to minister to. And we see their black hats, and we're unable to recognize that they're not any different than ourselves. then they have the same kinds of needs and longings that we want, that we have. One of the interesting things about in the Gospel of John about the story of Nicodemus is that I think that that story is placed in the Gospel in a way to contrast it with the fourth chapter. Because, in fact, that story in chapter 3 and chapter 4 of John is the same story that Jesus condenses in a few verses here. You have Nicodemus coming to God. Nicodemus coming to Jesus for a conversation. Nicodemus is a man of the Sanhedrin, a Pharisee, someone who does everything right. And he comes to Jesus and he struggles with understanding the message. Because Jesus says everyone needs a birth from above. And it just doesn't make sense to Nicodemus. How could it be that he needed a birth from above? And he leaves perplexed, not understanding. You move into the next chapter, and you have a different story. You have a Samaritan, a woman, a divorcee, who is now living with a man. And the surprise of that story is that this woman has spiritual needs. She has yearnings. She can understand. It makes sense to her. I think that in chapter 3 and chapter 4 of the Gospel of John, you have this same story told again. Nicodemus came to Jesus with his hands full and went away without receiving anything. The Samaritan woman knew who she was and knew that she had a black cat, and she was able to experience God's presence and God's work in her life. Some days, I'm more like the Pharisee, smug that God has someone like me on God's side. My hat is white, my hands are full, and I leave an encounter with God without receiving anything. But other days, I'm more like the tax collector. I have a black hat and I know it. My hands are empty because I have nothing to offer to God, only a plea in my heart for God's mercy. May each of us experience God's presence and God's mercy, and may it affect the way that we look at others as we look at ourselves and the way that we relate to God. This morning for our benediction, we're going to have a closing hymn. It is a hymn that has been important to me because it's a hymn that talks about God's steadfastness and God's ability to be present with us and to minister to us through the past as we expect God to in the future. Would you stand with me and we will sing the first, second, third, and sixth stanzas of O God, Our Help in Ages Past. 1, 2, 3, and 6. Would you join me?